Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The Florida Senate appears ready to go along with a 10-juror death penalty proposal, but some senators say they should have stuck to their guns and pushed for unanimous jury decisions.
If we don't pass a bill, our death penalty goes away. And I don't believe the House is going to be willing to let that happen.
Also tonight, legislative proposals are also dying in the legislature as lawmakers engage in a frantic game of beat the clock.
My responsibility as governor is to do exactly what I ran on in 2010 and 2014. There is no question what I ran on. Turn this economy around, make sure people can get a job. I'm very committed to doing everything I can, and I'm going to keep doing it.
We'll also get updates on proposed health care and child protection legislation, along with efforts to speed the handling of a huge backlog of rape kits gathering dust in some of the state's law enforcement agencies. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. The Florida legislature is on the verge of approving new death penalty procedures. Nick Evans reports the Senate is moving ahead with a compromise proposal from the House.
On the Senate floor Wednesday, Lake Worth Democrat Jeff Clemens, who sits on the Criminal Justice Committee, made his bid for unanimity.
We debated the bill. We had a workshop on the bill. We heard from experts on the bill. And as a committee, unanimously decided that we were going to require, like most other states, a unanimous jury verdict in this particular instance.
That particular instance is the final sentencing recommendation. Under the proposals in the House and Senate, juries have to be unanimous on the conviction and the aggravating factors that could elevate the sentence to death. Where the proposals diverge is the final recommendation. The House began at 9, and as Clemens says, the Senate wanted unanimity.
We did agree on in our Criminal Justice Committee on unanimity. But what the problem is there's two bodies in the legislature.
This is Baker Republican Greg Evers.
We knew that we had to do something. There had to be common ground. And so thus was the reason that the bill now is 10-2 to seek that common ground.
The compromise bill requires 10 of the 12 jurors agree on recommending the death penalty. But Clemens is critical of how Evers reached the agreement.
The underlying issue here is obviously, How do we want to treat these issues as a Senate? Do we want to allow them to be decided by a couple of people? Or do we want to do what the Senate traditionally does, which is to allow the Senate to have its voice? And then we send that voice in a group over to the House, and we start the back and forth process.
Fleming Island Republican Rob Bradley warns if the Senate fails to act, Florida may end up without a death penalty.
If this starts bouncing back and forth and there is no agreement, then we will in session, there will not be resolution to this issue, and those victims' families will continue to suffer because those cases will not be able to go forward because the judges simply won't know what to do.
But Rockledge Republican Thad Altman says the risks of that actually happening are low.
We don't have to yield to the House in any way, shape, or form. One is, if we don't pass a bill, our death penalty goes away. And I don't believe the House is going to be willing to let that happen. So why don't we send them the best possible product that we can send them, one that meets constitutional muster, one that's not going to put us right back here in the same place as we are today trying to fix an unconstitutional death penalty.
Clemens's amendment moving the Senate back to unanimity narrowly failed. The Senate will likely put the 10-juror proposal to a final vote Thursday. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Hours after hearing arguments in the case, the Florida Supreme Court today indefinitely postponed the execution of Mark James Assay, a convicted double murderer scheduled to die March 17th. Today's order was the second time the court indefinitely delayed a scheduled execution since that U.S. Supreme Court decision last month that struck down Florida's death penalty sentencing structure as unconstitutional. Governor Rick Scott issued the death warrants before the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in that case known as Hearst v. Florida. The high court's unanimous unanimous decision today came as the justices consider the potentially widespread impact of the January 12th ruling on the sentences of Florida's death row inmates. During arguments in the case earlier in the day, Assay's attorney, Marty McLean, argued that his client, who went for a decade without a lawyer to represent him in state appeals, should be able to present new evidence in his case. Assay was convicted in 1988 of the murders of Robert Lee Booker and Robert McDowell in downtown Jacksonville. There's a different kind of death taking place in the halls of the Florida Capitol this week. Some of the most controversial bills of this legislative session are dying as lawmakers rush to complete their work for the 2016 session. The casualties include a fracking bill backed by the oil and gas industry and an agreement with the Seminole tribe that would have expanded gambling in the state. Jim Ash has the postmortem.
The industry-backed fracking bill officially died Tuesday when the Republican sponsor decided not to call for a final vote in Senate Appropriations. The same committee voted 9-10 to kill it last week. Hydraulic fracturing generally involves blasting rock formations deep underground with high-pressure streams of water and chemicals. It's created a domestic oil boom, and Senator Garrett Richter of Naples equated his bill earlier this year to nothing less than a national security priority.
I believe that we as a state and we as a country should do everything possible we can do to increase the amount of resources and energy resources that we have, thereby reducing our reliance on people that want to sell us oil and at the same time destroy our way of life and kill us.
The bill was born a few years ago when a Texas oil company was caught using a fracking-like technique near the Everglades. The Dan A. Hughes Company was fined heavily and eventually pulled up stakes. Richter's bill would have set up a permitting program with stricter drilling regulations, but Richter couldn't sell the argument that Florida is powerless to stop fracking without them. Here's Democratic Representative Evan Jenny of Hollywood.
We're coming up on 2 years now with no fracking activity. If that were the case, it would have been happening time and time again.
Richter and Jenny agree rock-bottom oil prices are also a key limiting factor, at least for now. Environmentalists flooded lawmakers with emails and phone calls and jammed every committee hearing to speak against the bill. Jenny said it worked.
This is one I think the victory really belongs to the public and letting their senators know how bad of an idea this was.
Election year politics and redistricting also played a role, Jenny says. Senators wanted to avoid controversy as they introduced themselves to new voters. And Jenny says a constitutional redistricting amendment in 2010 created more diverse districts.
It's done what the groups who wanted to pass fair districts wanted. It's created a body that has to be representative of the public.
Also apparently dead, or at least on life support, is legislation to ratify a gambling agreement with the Seminole Tribe of Florida. Governor Rick Scott negotiated a deal in December that would have given the state $3 billion over 7 years. In exchange, the tribe would get exclusive right to craps and roulettes and slots and blackjack, but not in South Florida. On Tuesday, Senate Appropriations tabled the legislation. Lawmakers couldn't resist the temptation to expand gambling in their districts as the bill made its way through the process. It would have allowed slot machines in 5 counties where voters have already approved them. The bill became too loaded down, says Senate Regulated Industries Chairman Rob Bradley.
There just were too many ornaments added to the tree. And when that happens, sometimes the tree gets too heavy and it falls over. And, you know, it started as a modest bill and it turned into something much more.
Some supporters say the Seminole tribe was too heavy-handed. It fought to limit competition and launched a slick campaign to push a deal through. But Bradley doesn't agree with the critics.
The tribe is a sovereign nation, and they have certain rights under federal law for gaming. And so I have no quarrel whatsoever with how the tribe conducted themselves.
It's also likely Scott will lose another priority, his demand for a $1 billion tax cut and $250 million for Enterprise Florida, the state's business recruitment arm. The House is refusing to give money to Enterprise Florida, and its call for a complete elimination of the corporate income tax appears dead. Scott toured the state earlier this year to drum up support for the tax cuts. Reporters asked Scott Tuesday if he went overboard. He gave an unusually animated response.
And my responsibility as governor is to do exactly what I ran on in 2010 and 2014. There is no question what I ran on. Turn this economy around, make sure people can get a job. I'm very committed to doing everything I can, and I'm going to keep doing it.
With less than 10 days left in session, Scott has his work cut out for him. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Still to come on Capitol Report, a slew of health care bills makes the trek across the Florida Capitol from the House to the Senate.
Yeah, there was a mentioning that this could have a chilling effect on telehealth. It's Antarctica now.
The Florida legislature has sent a bill to the governor to address the state's untested rape kits backlog, saying it's needed.
So imagine if you were one of those individuals and the evidence that was needed to bring the perpetrator of the crime against you to justice, you would not have that evidence at your disposal.
And the House has approved a measure to protect pastors from lawsuits if they refuse to conduct marriages. But many lawmakers maintain the measure isn't needed.
Because the Supreme Court has already said that they do not have to marry against their religious belief. So if the Supreme Court has already said it, which I agree, then why are we here?
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
Some ambitious health care proposals are on their way to the Senate after overwhelming support by the Florida House. Lynn Hatter reports efforts to crack down on balanced billing and promote price transparency and increase the use of telehealth are up in the final weeks of the legislative session.
Many of the plans, like a South Florida Needle Exchange pilot program, have been before the Florida legislature for years. But this year, it's personal for lawmakers like Representative Kristen Jacobs.
I have a friend whose son just died in the parking lot of a Walgreens from a heroin overdose with the needle still in his arm. I have yet another colleague whose daughter hung herself from the rafters in a shelter in one of the parks in Broward County. These kids are doing this, and they're dying because they don't see any way out.
Florida's crackdown on pill mills is correlating to an increase in illegal drug use like heroin. The needle exchange is geared towards stopping the transmission of diseases like HIV, which is also on the rise in South Florida. It's a big step forward for lawmakers who previously rejected the bill over worries it would promote illegal drug use. Another years-long health care fight is reaching an end. The state is poised to finally get some rules in place to promote telehealth as the state grapples with an increasing demand for services. Democratic Representative Mia Jones has sponsored that bill for years, though this time it was Republican Representative Chris Sprouls who carried it.
But I wanted to touch on a couple of things. You know, there was a mentioning that this could have a chilling effect on telehealth. It's Antarctica now. It's Antarctica. It's non-existent in the context of what we believe as a house that it should look like, a vibrant market.
The approval of the telehealth bill lays out a path for the system to get off the ground in Florida. It's historically been opposed by the state's Doctors Association, which has fought provisions letting out-of-state doctors practice telemedicine in Florida. And to an extent, some doctors, like Republican Representative Julio Gonzalez, still don't like it.
But you know what it doesn't do? It doesn't do the crucial thing that I think it needs to do, which is to give the Board of Health, the Department of Health and the Board of Medicine, jurisdiction over that doctor.
Meanwhile, an emerging issue this year, surprise medical bills and a way to crack down on them, also got the okay. Though Gonzalez, who's an orthopedic surgeon, argues another measure requiring physicians to provide price quotes before surgeries could be burdensome.
Is that if every physician who's going to take a patient to the hospital will now have to call the insurance company, try to figure out what exactly that policy says, get that in some sort of format for the patient, and then deliver it to the patient all within 7 days. And more oppressively, if the physician fails to do that, then it will be at a cost of $500 a day to a maximum of $5,000.
Also getting support in the House, plans to expand ambulatory and recovery care centers, allowing doctors to take payments directly from patients for primary care services, and a push to let Florida join a multi-state compact for nurses. Advanced registered nurse practitioners would also be able to order medications for patients in a hospital, ambulatory surgical center, mobile unit, or nursing home. They could also prescribe medications to treat addiction. And Republican Representative Renee Plasencia says that will also help address heroin abuse.
But I also ask that you stay mindful on everything that's happening with heroin addiction and the adverse side effects to all families, regardless of whether they are actual the addicts or the family members, mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters to the addicts. Thank you.
Next, it's the Senate's turn. Many companion bills are before state senators. Those lawmakers can choose to accept the issues as they are and send them to the governor, or amend them and send them back to the House. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
A bill aimed at helping to address the state's rape kits backlog is now headed to the governor after passing the Florida legislature unanimously. That story from Sasha Cordner.
Last week, the Florida Senate unanimously passed Fort Myers Republican Senator Elizabeth Beniquisto's bill.
So imagine if you were one of those individuals and the evidence that was needed to bring the perpetrator of the crime against you to justice, you would not have that evidence at your disposal. And I want to thank the entire Senate for sticking up for victims and making sure that their voices and the attention that they deserve is given.
On Wednesday of this week, the Florida House also unanimously voted for the bill carried by Fernandina Beach Republican Representative Janet Atkins. The issue is personal to her because she knows of a family member who was sexually assaulted.
Rape kit backlogs have been an issue across the country. In Florida alone, we have over 13,000 unsubmitted kits. CS for SB 636 requires the timely submission and testing of DNA evidence collected in association with sexual assault investigations.
And according to an assessment by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, 9,400 of the state's untested rape kits are recommended for testing. Atkins' bill sets guidelines requiring the evidence has to be submitted within 30 days and the evidence has to be tested within 120 days. Lantana Democratic Representative Lori Berman applauded Atkins for her work on the bill.
Representative Atkins, it's been a huge embarrassment for our state that we have this backlog, and I'm so happy that we are finally addressing it, and I appreciate your bringing this good bill forward.
Tallahassee Democratic Representative Alan Williams also liked the bill.
I will tell you that the individuals, the state employees over FDLE who are working hard to try and bring justice to these women in our state, they are going to benefit from this. Women in our state will benefit from this. Mothers, daughters, sisters, aunts, grandmothers will benefit from this. To the person I sat by when I first came in this chamber for organizational session, Representative Janet Atkins, this is going to be a signature bill. Thank you for your leadership. I'm proud to vote for it today.
So far, the House and Senate Criminal Justice Budget Chairs have agreed to $2.3 million to assist the state's crime labs in taking care of the backlog. And Miami Democratic Representative Jose Javier Rodriguez says Atkins' bill and that allocation go hand in hand.
I want to thank the sponsor, and I want to thank our Attorney General and so many others who have really championed this issue, and not only the policy that we're passing, but also our budget, which, by my reading, fully funds what FDLE requested to deal with the backlog. So thank you for your leadership on this, and I guess thanks to all of us who are collectively, I guess, making the policy decision with our budget.
In a statement, Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi, who's made this one of her top priorities, called it a, quote, significant step. But she says as the budget continues to get worked on, they make sure funding is still available by the end of session to begin the testing of the on-process kits. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
After After a spate of child deaths in Florida, the Department of Children and Families is doubling down on child welfare reforms. Now state lawmakers are poised to pass a suite of bills to bolster that effort, as we hear from Kate Payne.
Reforms are still underway at the Department of Children and Families, and the state's foster care and adoption systems are getting reworked as well. Now some state lawmakers want to shift the court's priorities when placing children in those systems.
Current law permits even a parent who has murdered a spouse, committed egregious acts against their children, or who wishes to punish a foster parent that has provided a caring home for their child for a lengthy period of time, to choose who their child will be placed with because their parental rights have not been taken away yet.
That's bill sponsor Senator Nancy Dietert of Venice. Under Dietert's bill, judges would prioritize the interests of the child, even if it means overriding the parent's wishes.
This clears this up, and at least it will call for a judge to make a ruling, not for what's in the best interest of a parent, but for what's in the best interest of the child.
The bill has passed both chambers and now heads to the governor's desk. Dietert is also building on a new law that expands foster care services for young adults.
Over the past few years, we've enacted some major changes to the child welfare system. One of the changes, the extension of foster care to the age 21, has led to concerns about disparities in service delivery and placement options depending on where young adults live in the state.
Representatives Neil Cumby of Auburndale and Gail Harrell of Stewart are sponsoring a similar measure that passed the House Wednesday. Harrell says the bill is aimed at raising the standards for foster homes.
It also requires a quality rating system, and I think this is the key component, so we can upgrade the entire process and the facilities we have out there taking care of our children. It requires this quality rating system for both group homes and foster homes.
Representative Charles McBurney of Jacksonville wants stricter background checks for people working in child care. Under Florida law, sex offenders and people with certain felony convictions cannot work as child care providers. But McBurney says some can still slip through the cracks.
Currently, under Florida law, these crimes disqualify individuals from working as child care personnel. However, DCF is authorized to grant exemptions from disqualification under certain conditions, which would allow convicted murderers and arsonists to work in child care.
The measure would put a stop to those case-by-case exemptions. McBurney says a reporter first brought the issue to his attention.
A child care worker was working in a child care facility and had battered a young toddler. And it turns out that that person had committed a similar offense before. And the reporter said, which none of us ever want to hear, "Did you know that?" And my answer was no, but we're going to do something about it.
And Wednesday, McBurney followed through when the House passed the bill unanimously. The Senate is expected to take up the measure Thursday. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. House and Senate floor sessions are just part of the action at the Capitol tomorrow as we hear from Ronald J. Eben.
Senate Democrats caucus at 9 on Thursday morning. The Senate goes into session at 10. There's a bill called Victoria's Law that requires pharmacies to offer for sale prescription lockboxes. There's also a new alimony law bill to be voted on. There's a measure revising the authority of a licensed physician assistant to order medications under the direction of a supervisory physician. There's the Care for Retired Law Enforcement Dogs bill and the Medical Experimental Treatment for Terminal Conditions measure. The House goes into session at 10:30 and will take up a bill that establishes policies and procedures regarding officers wearing body cameras. There's also a bill that establishes the Florida Council on Poverty. Those are some of the highlights on tomorrow's legislative agenda. I'm Ronald J. Eben.
Finally tonight, a measure aimed at protecting the state's churches and clergy from lawsuits if they refuse to take part in marriage ceremonies that violate their religious beliefs has passed the House. And that story comes to us from Regan McCarthy.
The so-called Pastor Protection Act has received pushback from lawmakers like Tampa Democratic Representative Ed Narain, who calls the measure a mean-spirited jab at the LGBT community.
I get it.
This is a great election bill because it gives the impression that we're doing something. The perception of this bill is that it's going to force our members to choose between their ministers or choose the LGBT community.
And West Park Democratic Representative Chevron Jones says the measure stands to negatively impact more than just the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender, or LGBT community.
Where is the line drawn when we talk about discrimination? Black and white couple getting married, can they be discriminated against? A divorced individual who is remarrying, can they be discriminated against? Where is the line drawn with that?
And Representative Keone McGee echoes that concern, saying the Pastor Protection Act could more aptly be called the civil rights killer. He says there's no reason for the measure.
Because the Supreme Court has already said that they do not have to marry against their religious belief. So if the Supreme Court has already said it, which I agree, then why are we here?
But lawmakers like Winter Haven Republican Representative John Wood say there's a clear need for the measure. Wood says that need stems from the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling legalizing same-sex marriage across the country.
Now, that was a big deal. Shocked a lot of people in this country. And, you know, we just want to make sure with this bill that no one's religious beliefs are going to be violated for refusing to officiate at a civil ceremony.
Meanwhile, Ocala Republican Dennis Baxley says he does see discrimination happening. Discrimination against traditional families.
There is a war, a battle, an assault going on the traditional family. And there's no one member affected. Every one of you are affected. The foundation of our society, the built on Judeo-Christian principles, is affected.
The measure passed with an amendment that was supported by the LGBT advocacy group Equality Florida. Carlos Guillermo Smith says Equality Florida continues to have serious concerns about the bill, but has dropped its opposition with the addition of the amendment that includes more explanation about what entities will be covered by the measure's protections.
And the reason we supported it is because it removed vague and overly broad language that was originally in the bill, and it replaced it with a very clear subset of entities that are already covered by law.
The measure passed with an 82-37 vote, largely along party lines. It heads next to the Senate, where a similar bill had been poised for a floor hearing Wednesday until lawmakers temporarily postponed the measure. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Evan, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FBR Cap Report, and join us again each weeknight during the 2016 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.